This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
This is Carolyn Mace with Duncan Campbell and Living Dialogues, one of the best programs you'll ever listen to. I have to say, you are one of the best interviewers I've ever been with, and I want to thank you for the great respect you have for the subject of your interviewees. That is a rare, rare, rare gift. Thank you. You are a great interviewer.
From time immemorial, beginning with indigenous councils and ancient wisdom traditions, through the work of Western visionaries such as Plato, Galileo, and quantum physicist David Bohm, mutually participatory dialogue has been seen as the key to evolving and transforming consciousness, evoking a flow of meaning, a Daya flow of logos, meaning, beyond what any one individual can bring through alone. So join us now, as together with you, the active deep listener, we evoke and engage in living dialogues. Welcome once again to Living Dialogues. I'm your host, Duncan Campbell. I'm once again delighted to have with me my friend Carolyn Mace, author known to many of you for her numerous New York Times bestsellers, including the books we've talked about before together, The Anatomy of the Spirit, The Invisible Acts of Power, Sacred Contracts, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can, and now this magnificent new book, Entering the Castle, An Inner Path to God and Your Soul, which has reflected a whole new level of deep and profound, intimate understanding that's come to Carolyn in her own spiritual path, which she is now sharing with many people through workshops all over the world. And so in our remaining time, Carolyn, first of all, let me greet you again and say what a pleasure it is to be together.
Thank you. Same here, Duncan.
And rather than take us through the seven mansions, which you do very beautifully in the book, we can invite people to go to the book and to your website to learn further about the details there, particularly the book. And the website would be mace.com, M-Y-S-S.com. But let's talk about your own reflections now. As you're giving workshops, you're bringing out the fruits of this profound inner experience that you've described so beautifully in our prior dialogue. And what do you see happening? What kind of reception are you getting? What do you see happening in the world? And what is the big invitation that you feel that we're all being called to now as part of what you call this mystical renaissance?
Okay, let me start with this. One is that our hybrid spirituality of the last 50 years is not really a spiritual, it has been a spirituality that has combined therapy, health, organic foods, self-help. Our focus is self-help and consciousness, but consciousness is not and cannot be equated to devotion to God and prayer. So that one could say that the first level of the spirituality movement was to become conscious of the spirituality movement, which is not the same as making an interior commitment to a practice of prayer, devotion, and illumination. But rather, it was to become conscious of what we should become conscious of.
And in a sense, it's like the first mansion in the book.
It's exactly the first mansion.
It's the first mansion. We've been preparing the foundation.
What is consciousness and what is it I should be conscious of? Well, recycling. And I should be conscious of how I treat my body. And I should be conscious of the fact that this is going to become one planet. But becoming conscious of is not the same as deciding, and I need a deep soul practice, which should include and has to include, not should, but the first mansion is the should stage. Becoming conscious is simply the should stage. You know, I really should. And people think by saying I really should, it's the same as making a commitment. But really should is making a commitment to make a commitment to make a commitment. But no one at the consciousness level talks about God and prayer, because that's too conscious. They have to work their way there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because once you cross into a devotion to God and prayer, you are now in deep waters. You're in very deep waters. And those are waters where people have to go into the soul. Up until that time, they're into the mental experience of God. They're into a very controlled experience of God, where they can control it by what they do and the seminars they go to and the books they read. Mm-hmm. And they can tell themselves that their experience of God, mm-hmm. their experience of God, is conducted at a weekend at Omega or Kripalu.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're
contained.
It's contained mm-hmm. at their weekend spa.
At will.
At will. Mm-hmm. And then they do yoga at lunch mm-hmm. for stress reduction.
Mm-hmm.
Not for interior illumination, but for because they have a bad heart or because they have high blood pressure. And yes, they may talk about God, but they really don't.
And may want to live longer.
And they want to live longer. And mm-hmm. it's got to do with the spirit is the workhorse of the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't talk about death, we're death phobic. All of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work has been for naught.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about eternity. Eternity is the name of a cologne Elizabeth Taylor did. You know, we still use our spirit, and if we get our spirit in order, it will protect us from becoming diseased and decaying. It has nothing to, we never, ever discuss eternity and what is to become of us from here. We prefer past lives because then we can make up where we've been when we died, and we know how they ended.
Mm-hmm. It's always more comfortable to know the end of the story.
Right.
And really, this invitation into this profound cloud of unknowing, like that great mystical text from the medieval years, and the wisdom of uncertainty, as some have called it. This is what we're now called to go beyond exactly what you're talking about into this larger pathless dimension, which nonetheless has a guide. But that guide is the one we now have to have confidence in, as you say, in our inner.
Well, let me give a practical example of it. Mm-hmm. A reason, not mm-hmm. example, but a practical reason why
mm-hmm.
we are, why I believe this mystical renaissance has engaged. As I said earlier, fundamentalism rises when the external world falls into a chaos that reason cannot handle.
Mm-hmm.
Because we love reason. We worship at the altar of reason. Our God has been carved by the age of reason.
Mm-hmm.
And by Descartes and Galileo, and as soon as we discovered the age of reason, we took our chisel out, and we chiseled exactly the kind of God we wanted. We wanted a God that did everything he does for reasons. And if you look at the way people approach health and disease, they will say, even today I was on a phone call with someone who says, I'm learning so much from my illness, which is a superstitious way of saying, and if I absolutely learn everything, I'll be awarded and rewarded by God saying, now you good little boy, you've learned all your lessons and now I'll give you your health back.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't get out of that mode. If I'm good, I shouldn't, nothing bad should happen to me. And if I'm bad, oh well. And then I'll learn my lesson and I'll get the good things, right? I'll get it back, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't get out of that.
It's like a business deal mentality, as one of my Tibetan teachers used to describe it, the business deal mentality towards spirituality. And it has to be let go of if anything further is going to progress.
But we can't, because it's so controlling.
Yep.
It's like, it's not fair. We have two words that are absolutely lethal, blame and deserve. Mm-hmm. I don't deserve this. I'm a good person. Mm-hmm. And if something goes wrong, I will find someone to blame. That's why we have lawyers. And we make someone sign papers 10,000 times ahead of time that says, if this deal doesn't work out, I will find someone to blame for it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone other than me is responsible for my life. Don't you get that?
Mm-hmm.
And I will find those person. And I'll make someone sign a piece of paper that says, I'll take responsibility if this falls apart, because mm-hmm. it can't be you. It can't be destiny. It can't be fate. It can't be the hand of God. I will sue you mm-hmm. if this doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
So to get someone to do something as unreasonable as to say, I surrender, God. Into your care I put my spirit. I put my soul. Never mind spirit. Spirit's the ego's relationship to God. Soul is the real thing.
You know, you just described really a remarkably subtle sense of the Pavlovian response, that we've been so conditioned that if we do this, then this will happen, as opposed
but
to...
that's how we are.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's really a kind of a mass Pavlovian conditioning in a certain way, and that's the first thing that one has to break out of. And in your first three mansions, or your description of the first three mansions of the interior castle, you talk about discovering the reptiles, the things in our psyche that we really need to actually banish from the castle, but we can't do it unless we first confront it and acknowledge that this desire to blame someone else, this kind of vindictiveness, or these other toxic, poisonous
streams. Part of it is the control humiliation's had over us. But let me go back to this one very critical example of why lay mystics are needed now more than ever. Our world is in a level of chaos that is unrivaled. And it's not going to be resolved by reason. Because the truth is, we are at this pivotal turning point where all the myths of all the sky gods are colliding. We are at a time when we have to renegotiate. We have to negotiate a new way of being, because we are running out of collective resources. We are needing to put ourselves on a different level of equal footing with other people. And the fact is, no culture wants to do it. Look at us. Look at the world. Let us not kid ourselves. The collective egos of every culture do not want to see themselves as equal with third world countries, or this world country, or that. There is no such thing as wanting to be militarily equal with everybody else. There is no such thing. So, at that level, everybody is willing to fight to the death, no matter how irrational it is, no matter how much you point out, there is no resolution in war, and there never has been. There never has been. You can shake people like rag dolls. And say, don't you get that? Don't you get that? I get that, but I'll still fight, because I will not be an equal. Don't tell me those people are equal to me. Don't even go there. Don't even go there. Don't even go there. It's a mass hysteria. It's a mass spell. It is a bad spell. It is a hypnotic possession. And yet, here's mysticism. Underneath all this madness, Duncan, the soul is capable of understanding what that madness cannot, what the mad, irrational brain, mind cannot, which is that ultimately we are called to be one humanity. Now, if you teach that in a classroom on a calm, beautiful day, a bunch of New Agers can sit around and say, while they're eating their organic food, absolutely, that's true. But I will tell you, put them back in public, and they don't function from that in the psychic, emotional way. They do not, because they're human, because they're Americans, because they're whatever they are. When it gets back to their lower groin, they'll fight for superiority.
Yeah, that first chakra of insecurity is looking for control.
They will fight for security. But if that truth were animated in their soul, if during some deep state of prayer, God came to them in a mystical experience and animated that truth, and in one tiny, 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 tiny microsecond, they actually experienced the whole, the cosmic heart of the sacred, and in a microsecond, could experience the love that the mystic spoke about, the love that the cosmic Christ had, the love that Rumi spoke of, in a microsecond. And then it's turned off, because the human heart can't contain that. This is the love that Bernini illustrated in his statue, with an angel piercing with fire the heart of Teresa. then when that mystic, when that person now speaks as a mystic and says, this is evolution happening in its lowest form because we are called to be one humanity. But at that point, it's that person's soul speaking from truth, not a mind talking from theory on a nice day where mm-hmm. there's no trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now that soul is one who holds that truth, contains that truth, is that truth, no matter where they are. That's a mystic out of a monastery. And these people are being called to become illuminated, to become illuminated in this truth, and then to take this truth, to hold these truths within themselves, no matter where they are in the world, whether they're teachers or doctors or businessmen, they are called to reach and hold a deeper level of truth while this world spins in chaos, to become channels for grace. This is what the great mystics were. Mm-hmm. This is why the world survives chaotic times. They're not called into celibacy. They're not called into poverty, but they are called into prayer.
Exactly, and I think we can rephrase that great Rudyard Kipling saying to hold on to your souls while all those around you are losing theirs.
Mm-hmm.
That sense of being so completely centered, and then also being able to move from prayer back out into communication, as you say, with all of the world. It's as if the monastery itself then becomes a symbol of containment. So it's mystics outside the monastery, mystics beyond the monastery, as exemplified by St. John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila. They were mystics that were outside the monastery. And I think here precisely of the sense of annihilation and uncertainty and intoxication with the soul spirit that one feels in Rumi or Hafez, and now UNESCO has just declared 2007 to be the year of Rumi on the 800th anniversary of his birth.
I'm doing a workshop on that.
Well, it's so perfect with what we're saying, because this was Rumi's sense as well, to be the mystic in a sense, you know, in the world. And as we're coming to the end of this particular dialogue, I remember a wonderful saying that Coleman Barks once quoted, our great friend with whom I've done a number of dialogues as well. And he said, the Sufis have a saying that there are three ways to go to God, and the first is prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And a step above that is meditation, and a step above that is conversation. So that sense of entering into the depths with prayer and then stabilizing that with meditation so you can go out and meet the pain and the chaos that others are suffering as well. And then you can actually bring that sense of prayer and centeredness into service for others. As you say at the end of your book, the numerous points that you address of how to actually create this sense of mysticism within yourself and then to take it in the world. One of the things is to see yourself as a channel of grace and see how can I serve. Think of it that way.
You must go and be a vessel of service.
Yes, that's the end game of this entire wonderful journey.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly as that beautiful story you told of the person just holding the homeless man and saying, I will pray for you, and this suffering will end.
And it did. And he went back. He mm-hmm. said, I am not homeless today, because that woman was not afraid to touch me mm-hmm. while I was in rags. And she said, I will pray for you and you mm-hmm. will get out of this. And I did.
And any one of us can do that at any time. And
$1,000 wouldn't have done that for him.
Absolutely. You know, and you wouldn't even touch him with $1,000. You'd touch the money and it would pass.
That's right.
And there would
and
be no
contact.
And
it would make you feel better than him.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. In fact, one great story I'm thinking of is a person who witnessed the great contemporary Saint Amici, who was in her ashram, and she hugs everybody.
Right,
sometimes,
Amici, the hugging saint.
Oh, 10,000 people. I was at one place in Bangalore where all night long she hugged over 10,000 people. I was one of them. So I witnessed it, and I sat on the stage with her, and as she hugged me, she looked at me and she said, is everything all right? And I said, oh, more than all right. You know, and she smiled and beamed and so on. But the story that I heard that really struck me was someone who went to her ashram in Kerala, and they were all sitting there waiting for the evening to begin, and a man appeared in the ashram who was so disfigured, his skin was like spaghetti. It was curled, and he had some awful disease that was just repugnant and fear-inducing even to look at, with his skin not even smooth, but like, you know.
Elephantitis or something?
Well, I don't know. It was the skin was curled on itself, so
oh
that, you know,
God.
It was like little curls all over him, and he was just like, people went, oh my God, and he slowly walked up to her, and in front of 1,000 people, she hugged him. And everyone there was profoundly affected by that. And I think your story of what we can do ourselves is very similar to that. Just by reaching across these fear-based boundaries that you've described so well in your book and meeting life itself with the heart and soul of who we really are. And, you know, for depicting that so beautifully. Carolyn, it's time, unfortunately, for us to close this dialogue, but I want to again thank you for so passionately transmitting this and for living it. And I feel that this dialogue has been itself an evocation that's been blessed by Teresa.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Duncan.
I'm your host, Duncan Campbell. I've been speaking with Carolyn Mace, best-selling author of Anatomy of the Spirit and Sacred Contracts, and most recently, Entering the Castle, An Inner Path to God and Your Soul. Be with us again on Living Dialogues. And once you have entered your free subscription to the Living Dialogues podcast here on Personal Life Media, future Living Dialogues will automatically be downloaded to your computer on a weekly basis. If you'd like to obtain a CD, MP3, or full transcript of this dialogue or additional dialogues I've done with the many other transformational thinkers listed on my website, livingdialogues.com, you can contact me through that website, livingdialogues.com. That's living, DIALOGUES.com. Thanks again for your deep listening. All the very best.
Find more great shows like this on PersonalLifeMedia.com.